Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
We are trying to whip it to perfection, continuing my series on diversity in the workplace. This is Rayanne Thorne, very happy to have you all here today. Hope you're listening in on the series and enjoying the past conversations we have. I've spoken with Torin Ellis about racial bias, had an opportunity to chat with Master Burnett last week talking about LGBTQIA, as the acronyms continue down the alphabet there, on that type of bias, and also spoke about ageism with Mark Miller a couple weeks ago. So I'm continuing this series this morning, and I brought a wonderful guest. I was so excited when she said yes when I approached her about talking about this topic, gender bias or gender equality. Robin Schooling, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Rayanne. Good morning. I'm thrilled to be here with my coffee.
Yes, coffee. That's a requisite. This is why we have to do an early morning show, and why we're called HR Latte. You have to have coffee in hand. It's not exactly coffee and cars with Jerry Seinfeld, but it's close. I'm trying.
That's right.
So, Robin, tell us a little bit about yourself and about your company and maybe why I might have asked you to speak to this topic.
Okay. Well, I'm a long-standing HR practitioner, HR professional with about 25 years or so in HR. And a couple of years ago, I left in-house HR, even though I still call myself a practitioner because I'm still practicing HR all the time, and started my own company called Silver Zebras. And so let me tell you why, because people often ask, why Silver Zebras? And a couple of reasons. One, I did not want it to sound like an HR-related business. People, talent, HR, whatever. So I kind of made that conscious decision, but there's meaning behind it as well, in that zebras, just like every human being, are unique and individual. They're striping the patterns that they have. There's no zebras like any other zebra. And zebras also live and travel in herds or harems, which are called dazzles. If you did not know that,
now
you learned something. Yep.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah. So the focus is the uniqueness and awesomeness of the individual, coupled with the strength and support that can be gathered by working with a group or being with a group, and that's just like the workplace.
I love that. Well, thank you for, I had asked you, please tell us about the name. I don't know if you've ever been out to Southern California, but the Hearst Castle and Simeon. So did you see the zebras?
Yes.
Yeah, you can see them right from Pacific Coast Highway. It's fantastic. All of a sudden, cars are stopping and people are getting out and taking pictures. There are dazzles of zebras that roam in San Simeon, which is an unusual sight here in California if you're not in a zoo. So, well, thanks again, Robin, for joining us today. I want to kick off our conversation and jump right in. We're talking about gender bias today. I never thought that I would face gender bias, and I certainly have. And also the pay equality issue has been a problem for me in the past. And so I'd love for you to, let's talk about this. And before we do, I don't want this to be one-sided. Do you think that men face a gender bias, perhaps maybe in certain professions? If you could expound on that a bit.
You know, I absolutely do. And I think there are two ways that men face gender bias in related to the workplace. And the one, which I won't really delve into, but if we think about it, most men have a woman or multiple women who are important in their lives, their mother, their spouse, a friend, a child, a daughter. And if those women are facing bias in the workplace, that's affecting the man. So think about that.
For sure. For sure.
But But I think from a in the workplace itself and in certain professions, I've seen it where people probably kind of poo-poo it to some degree, but it still gets at the underlying issue. I worked for an organization once where we had a inbound customer service / inbound sales department, about 10 people, fairly small group. And historically, everyone that worked in that department had been female, including the managers. There had never been a male in that department. And shortly after I started working with the group, two positions came open. And so we went about and did our recruiting, came to the hiring manager with, here's, you know, 6-7 applicants we'd like you to interview. And she took a look at the resumes and said, well, two of these are men. Two of these are guys. I said, yeah, and? Well, we've never had a guy. Why would they want this job? You know, they're not going to want this job, but why are they even applying? You know, this is, and she really didn't come quite out and say, you know, I only want women, but she was saying, I only want women. I said, no, just, you know, let's look at their resumes. You need to interview them. Let's go through the process. At the end of the day, as you can perhaps imagine by the point of this story, the top two candidates, one was a male, one was a female. And then she kind of waffled again with, why would I hire him? You know, he really kind of blew me away. Yes, he's absolutely got, you know, the best background of anyone we've ever, you know, considered here recently, all this sort of thing. But, I just don't quite understand why he would want this position. And so it was kind of this flip of the universe, but it was definitely stereotyping that these are clerical support administrative positions.
Right.
How would a man fit into that? Why would he want it even?
Right.
So it was really an opportunity to educate that hiring manager, ultimately educate the rest of the team.
Absolutely.
And start to change that dynamic.
Well, and we can look and see several different professions. The teacher, when I was young and
right.
in elementary school, I never saw a male teacher until sixth grade.
Right.
And I remember all the girls were a Twitter, you know, because it was Mr. Duncan. I can remember him in sixth grade, you know, the only male teacher any of us had seen. The nursing profession, I worked in the dental field for 20 years and never saw a man hold a dental instrument and pass
mm-hmm.
it to a dentist until
right.
long after I left the industry, right? And
mm-hmm.
dental hygiene, any of those professions where we traditionally see women in roles.
Yeah.
Are starting to open up. My last several visits to the dentist, I had a male hygienist, I had a male assistant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is shifting, it is changing, and for the good. For one reason, I'm sure having men in a dental assisting role raised that salary. I guarantee it because my salary was very, very low compared to that of the dentist, even though I probably could do the same work that he was doing. Now, obviously, the education was different, but still, I mean, we're talking about the basis for any type of gender bias. So,
mm-hmm.
Robin, have you faced gender bias yourself? Do you think about it? I mean, I'm one of those people, I don't wake up in the morning and think, oh, I have to try harder because I'm a woman. Damn
right.
it. You know, I don't ever think that. So have you faced it? How have you approached it in your own life?
I not overtly to the point that it really struck me in the face as, you know, they're making a distinction here. The ways that I've experienced it have been subtle, and they're sort of these societal ways of addressing men and women type of thing. So I think back, you know, over the years, and not that long ago, where in one particular organization, I'm working in there handling HR for this particular work group, and some of the employees who were 99% male. It's one guy actually called me the HR girl.
Oh, no way!
And he was an employee. He just didn't think about it. Oh well, you're the HR girl, so I told them to contact you. you know, that sort of thing. It was also at that particular organization where we had a client of the company who was on site with us, and he and I happened to be standing alone and having a conversation about something, and he made reference to, well, the girls, you know, in such and so department, referencing some of our employees in one of our work groups. Well, you know, your girls. And I looked at him, and as the words were coming out of my mouth, I thought, I'm going to get fired, but I didn't care. I looked at him, and I said, well, you know, mean the ladies or the women that are working back in that department? Yeah, I said, I wouldn't necessarily call them girls because they probably haven't been girls since they were about 13 years old, if you really think about it. And he kind of looked at me, and he didn't quite know how to answer that, and so the conversation just moved on. But
you know that's interesting because he probably didn't even think about it. You know, he didn't even think that it might be offensive or a problem or not the right way to address professionals working within the company. Interesting story, real quick. I was sitting at a bar in an airport recently, just kind of waiting for my flight, and a gentleman sat down next to me, and the bartender, who is a woman, walked right up and said, "Hey, honey, what can I get you?" And it really offended me. I looked at him and I said, I wanted to say, are you okay with her just calling you honey? And she called him that over and over and over. So it does cross over from one side to the other. But for me, sitting there listening to it, because I would not be happy if a male bartender said, "Hey, sweetie, what do you want?" You know, and you don't hear that anymore unless you know the bartender, you know, you're friendly with that individual. So it was kind of shocking to hear that coming out of a woman's mouth.
I think one of the things that I almost feel like, you know, an anthropologist or something sometimes, because I live in South Louisiana, but I'm not from here. So we've lived here for 13 years, and I moved here from the Midwest. And I'm just much more aware of things that are often accepted and passed off and applauded as Southern charm or, you know, gentlemanly charm. Which just raise my hackles, you know, the hair on the back of my neck sometimes stands up, because it's viewed by many people as polite and it's nice, but I sometimes see it as sort of this patronizing attitude
very much
that, you know, these gentlemen have to the little ladies. Interestingly enough, I've seen other women do the same thing. I have a colleague, a friend, who works in HR here in South Louisiana. She has a team of four people who have been, in some iterations, it's been all women on her team. In some iterations, it's been men and women. And she refers to her team of HR professionals as the girls. And she is in her 40s herself, and will refer to, you know, well, the girls and I are doing XYZ. When she had a male on her team, it was the girls and I and Bob are doing XYZ. and when Bob was gone, well, it's the girls and I are doing XYZ. And bear in mind, again, these girls, you know, one of them was like 60 years old, but, you know, she was just one of the girls. And it just drives me crazy. And I sometimes feel like when I point these things out, it's like shouting into the wind. But it's seen as okay in some quarters.
Well, because it's you know, it seems like it's normal, non-professional speak, right? I worked with a couple of sales professionals who kept saying "you guys" whenever they'd be on the phone. "So you guys, how are you doing the job? What kind of software works better for you guys?" And I had to tell them several times, look, not only is it not professional, it's Slack. It's also, you don't know who else is on the phone. There may be several sales professionals that are women and may not like that type of conversation or that, you know, Slack speech. It's non-professional. So let's kick it up a notch. Let's not say your guys' software, how are you using it, you know, because then it becomes everything drops a level, right? So really interesting. So Robin, as a seasoned HR professional, what can you share with us that other HR professionals should remember when faced with a bias issue, a bias claim, harassment? We know that harassment, I have a really interesting story about harassment when we get through with this. Harassment takes place. What's the best thing? Is there a great way to prevent it? Is education the way? Or many organizations just wait until there's a problem?
I think there are certainly preventative things to do, and there are the reactive things to do. And sometimes how you handle those, if you haven't done anything preventative, how you react the first time or multiple times becomes the first step in preventing. So I think, and this is with any sort of HR issue, but especially, Sally Sue comes and says, whether it's something that rises to the level of discrimination or it's just a workplace issue or there's some sort of sense of I'm treated this way because of my gender, the key for any HR professional, and sadly I see them sometimes lacking in this, is to take it seriously. If it's important enough and if Sally Sue has gotten the strength to come in and bring this up, it's important. And you may think it's inconsequential or it's not going to amount to anything. The first obligation is to treat her with respect, treat the complaint, treat the issue with respect, investigate it, whatever path that goes down. So that's there's the reactive part, which also starts to signal, you know, how we handle these things, how important they are to us. But, you know, I think from the basic preventative side, I think there are a couple of key issues and things to always keep in mind. I mean, a lot of it is, first of all, understanding unconscious bias, starting with, you know, I need to start that with myself. I need to understand my own biases, my own unconscious biases, and sort of build that self-awareness. But then I need to educate, train, educate managers and leaders about that. What does that look like? Is that the classic, you know, well, I just want to hire everyone that looks like me? Or is that the, tendency to take behavioral attributes and look at them differently? You know, a man is, he's an aggressive go-getter, and the female employee who exhibits the same behaviors, you know, she's a domineering bitch, you know, type of thing.
That's exactly what I have faced.
You know, call people out on that is part of that education, that training. And then it's educating, you know, not just a class once a year type of thing. It needs to be embedded in HR operational procedures, having those discussions with senior leaders, with the board of directors, if that's applicable, around the business impact of having a gender, an inclusionary work environment. What does that mean? What's the business impact of that? As well as the legal, you know, ramifications of discrimination, you know, or something of that nature. And a lot of times HR professionals approach that conversation from, well, don't do these things because here will be the bad after effects of it. And that's part of it, that piece needs to be in there, but it's also, here's why it's a good thing. And so thinking about how that can be a good thing. Are we diversifying our applicant pool sufficiently? Are we giving equal opportunity to men, to women, to, you know, all people? To have access.
I love that you gave it that twist, right? Because so often we think about these are the bullet points of what you can't do.
Right.
Instead of saying, if you adhere to good employment behavior, these are the kind of things that will happen that are good for your organization. This is how your organization will grow. This is how things will change for the better. I'm so glad you added that sweet little twist to it. If we have some HR professionals that are maybe a one-man band within an organization listening right now, they don't know how to do this, how to approach it, how to, and they see issues, right? They've got a growing, maybe a small software company has been involved in this kind of situation, and they see things starting to occur, patterns that are okay, right? Where can they go? Is, I mean, obviously we can Google HR law, or we can Google laws regarding gender biases, or, but is there a good place that you can refer folks to where they can find a little bit more about specific HR laws regarding gender bias?
I think, and I've been a one-man band too, so I absolutely know. I think, I mean, you know, there's certainly, you can find the very readily the resources on compliance, you know, if you want, and that's, again, that's often where HR people start. Here's sort of this you know, the laundry list. This is what I have to make sure to tell my managers. We can find that, you know, via SHRM, via the HR.coms, via, you know, lawyers, via whatever. I think the change, again, a lot of that starts with the individual person and what do they want to learn? What do they want to understand? They have to understand it themselves. What are my biases? You know, because I have them too, right? Where am I coming from? What's my background? And then seek out information. Just, I mean, Googling unconscious bias. There are a lot of people talk about that a lot. Shout a little love to Jill Gerstand, who speaks to that and writes to that quite a bit. Great, well, you know, source of information. There are certainly, you know, diversity and inclusion groups that have resources. The Cook and Ross folks have a wealth of information. And it's really just diving in and understanding what some of these things can look like, which then allows that, I mean, any HR professional, especially that solo HR professional, to go in to the CEO, COO, whoever it is, the entire leadership team, and say, here are some things I've noticed. But approaching it from not just, I you know, read this really neat thing from SHRM or whatever, but here, going in armed with the internal
authority,
the internal data, the internal statistics. What have I noticed as the HR manager in this organization where I'm seeing trends or patterns? There's one department that, you know, one manager that never seems to be able to hold on to women, for example. Or here, you know, we look around this meeting room with the senior leadership team and we say, well, we have no women in here. Well, what's the story behind that? Because it's not often the fact that these folks were hired from outside and we just didn't find a female candidate. What's the story behind that? What's the internal data telling us about what's our pipeline to get people into these positions? Because it's that pipeline of somebody further down in the organization who was maybe not given the opportunity to fall into that pipeline that could get them into a leadership position or a department head position or whatever it may be. So it's HR having to, which is hard to do, especially when you're by yourself in your small organization, have to really kind of step back and observe and dig in to the numbers and the data and the stories and the trends.
Well, you know, it's hard to say this is what I see happening and this is what is wrong, when we need to shift it a little bit and say, I want to protect the organization, and if we don't shift some behavior, there's going to be a problem. We're going to have a problem. We're going to continue to lose quality employees, and somebody may turn around and sue us, and then we're liable for the type of behavior that we could have stopped, that we could have prevented, right? And so I think in a one-man band situation, that's, you need to go in armed with that, saying, look, we need to start protecting ourselves. We're growing. Things are changing. There's not just four men working out of a garage anymore, right? We've got to start thinking about the women we bring in or the women that we aren't allowing in, right? And open up our minds a little bit about this bias is, even though we aren't saying harassing things in front of people, there's a bias that's going on here that is limiting our capabilities for the future.
Yep.
My daughter works in hospitality as a hostess at a high-end restaurant, and there was a bartender slash server that was saying really horrific things to all the girls, and they are girls. I'm talking 21 and under, any of the girls that were not allowed to bartend or serve because of their age.
Right.
Really horrific things, and social media and texting, SMS, became a part of the problem because everybody has everybody's phone numbers. And he was sending text messages and saying things in Facebook Messenger. And all the girls, younger girls, were afraid. They were afraid to say anything. They were afraid to spend any time alone with him. If they'd get cornered in one side of the restaurant, he would invariably say something that was really obnoxious and lewd. And as a mother that lives in the world of HR, it was really hard for me to watch her go through this. And I would tell her, just be blunt with him. Tell him, you know, that you may have a problem keeping your job if you continue this type of behavior, right?
Yeah.
But she waited and held her breath until a manager overheard him say something. And within 3 days, he was gone. He was gone, but it had gone on for 4 to 6 months. It escalated, right? It kept getting worse. It kept getting worse. And this gentleman was 35, between 35 and 40, had a wife at home, right? And I think Audrey, my daughter, popped off to him a couple of times. Does your wife know you talk like this to the girls at work? So, yes, we have to be bold, but we also need to feel that we're protected by authority, by people in charge, right? And the owner of the restaurant did not waste any time. As soon as he learned of the multiple infractions that were taking place, this gentleman was escorted off the premises, Keith. Within an hour, all the key, because he was a manager, too, all of the locks were changed at the business, place of business, you know. And then there's this ongoing fear from the other young ladies that there would be repercussions or, you know, that there would be some kind of revenge take place because he knew all of their phone numbers. He knew what kind of cars they drove, you know. So it's a fearful thing when you're afraid to report a bias that's taking place, right? Why do you believe biases in general continue to thrive? Are we just still narrow-minded? We cannot grasp the fact that it's okay if somebody's different than us. Are we afraid of those differences? And then on the end of that question, are we getting any closer to some kind of equality in the workplace? Pay equality continues to just be this horrific thing that we cannot seem to solve. I don't know. I don't understand why it's an issue. I really don't. But what do you think about biases in general?
Yeah, you know, I think they continue. I think we continue to see bias, and whether that be the gender bias we're talking about today, or some of these other biases that you've been talking about in the series, because it's slow moving. It's moving. It's changing the course of the ocean liner. And at the end of the day, you know, we're hundreds of millions of individual people coming in with different perspectives. And so here's the answer to why we're here talking about this today, because here come my, you know, sort of, I'm going to stand on my, you know, I'm going to say feminist, but it's really a human soapbox for a minute. I think we, in terms of gender bias, very broadly, you know, we come from this place still of this history of patriarchy in sort of how society has been. Not everybody, and you know, certainly not all people kind of have, you know, the same core beliefs in that, but I certainly know that there are groups, there are subsets, it may be based on religious belief, it may be based on family dynamics, whatever it is, where it's okay and it's truly believed that men are superior, really. I've seen that word used. Men should be making the decisions. Women should, you know, follow the orders of men. So there are some people, some groups that have, you know, this deep-seated belief that that's the way it should be. And, you know, it's hard then, especially if that's based on a religious, you know, strongly held religious belief, it's hard then when that clashes with what we need to do in the workplace or what the expectations are. If somebody comes into the workplace with that sort of kind of core belief, it's hard for them to switch that off. And so we run into this dynamic of, you know, obviously you have every right to believe, you know, have the faith that you have and all that sort of thing, but how do you marry that with the expectation of how you treat people in the workplace or how you do your job or, you know, you're a man, but you're going to take orders from a woman at work, you know, and we run into those sorts of things. So on one level, I think that's why it exists. And it's slow changing. As I said, you know, here in the South, you know, it's seen as gentlemanly. It's so different in different pockets of the country, different pockets of the world. I think with, you know, I think the pay equity issue, you know, is so interesting. And you can read, you know, research after research and hear study and this, these statistics and whatnot. And everybody sort of has a different, you know, dollar amount and whatever. I know the Bureau of Labor Statistics, I think they're currently saying women are 82 cents for every dollar by men,
right,
you know, earned by men. And that's not, that's across occupations, that's across, you know, industries and all that sort of thing. But, I think, again, I'm going to come back to, I think, underlying that, it's more than just paying, you know, dollar for dollar sort of thing. It does come back to what are those opportunities in the past? What's that pipeline of getting women, in this case, getting women into the positions that allow them to begin to earn more? You know, every organization has kind of the, may not even be a job title or a job transfer or a promotion or whatever, but most every organization has kind of these plum assignments or some really cool project that somebody can work on, or every year we have this team that gets together that does whatever. And those sorts of assignments or roles give someone, you know, professional exposure to senior leaders, to the community, whatever it may be. That's another one of those reasons that HR leader should look at that, you know, back it down, go back down the pipeline, take a look at that. Are women, for example, having access to serve in those capacities, which are the sort of things that may lead them into leadership roles? You know, kind of questioning that, that can make a difference.
And it's so important, right? And it's not just women complaining. It's the right thing to do.
Right.
I mean, I really struggle with people attaching a bias to something that should just be the right thing to do.
Right, exactly.
I always try to adhere to a universal code of ethics when I was taking my first ethics class, and we talked about, you know, the general right and wrong in the world. Like, you wouldn't walk up mm-hmm. behind someone and trip them if they didn't see you coming, or, you know, shove an old lady into the street. You know, there are certain things that you just wouldn't do, right? And I think that we need to start thinking that way. What is right? What is wrong? And not attach whatever my own personal morals are to, whether it's religion or mm-hmm. or the good old boys of the South or whatever you have mm-hmm. you adhere to as your laws. Kind of look at the big picture. What's the right thing to do? I mean, realistically, is it the right thing to pay a woman who's doing the same job less? It's not the right thing. Not the right thing to do at all. It's so weird to me.
And sometimes that just becomes, again, an outside voice pointing it out to people. I remember I worked at one organization, a large global organization, and within the division that I worked, there was one time where managers, directors and above, were being taken off site to whatever, you know, Phoenix for 3 days, you know,
right.
All sorts of debriefings and this and that and the state of the business, blah, blah, blah. And as part of that 3-day event, there was an afternoon of outside activities. And so the information that came out, hey, everybody, we're, you know, so glad we're going to be doing this, that, and the other thing on Thursday afternoon. Pick what you want to do so we can, you know, get people signed up and we know how many people are doing what. Guys you can either go on this fishing trip or go golfing. Women, you can go spend the afternoon at the spa or tour the winery.
What?
And this was not that long ago. I mean, within the last decade.
Oh, my gosh.
And so someone I worked with, and it was probably 70% men that were going to, you know, that were going to be at this thing. But one of the women that I worked with got it, and she was like, oh, my God, can you believe it? She's like, I don't think, you know, I can't believe this. So she, like, sent a note back to the, you know, person that was kind of organizing this and said, hey, you know, just kind of want to point out, I don't like going to the spa, and I'm not a wine drinker. I would really like to go on the fishing outing. Can I do that?
Right.
Well, of course you can. Of course you can. You know, anybody can go to anything. Okay, good to know. You probably,
but,
you know, just for the future, don't want to segregate and make assumptions. So they didn't come from this with this intent of
right.
of doing that, but they still did.
That's what you were talking about earlier, right? The unconscious
yeah.
bias. I mean, you don't even think that somebody might be offended by that. I spoke at a conference called it was a women leadership conference not too far away, and they called it Business in Heels, right? And the picture on the front of it was a woman walking in pink 3-inch pumps, right?
Oh,
and I
my.
Was mortified. I was mortified. You've just set us back 50 years, you know? I don't understand women perpetuating the problem, right? I really, really
right.
have an issue with that. So, Robin, we are almost out of time, and so I want to make sure we get in a couple of things. You are successful at what you do. You had a long, wonderful history as an HR professional. You have your own business now. When you consider your own future, so we want to dive into who Robin Schooling is. When you consider your own future
mm-hmm.
and the services that you provide to your clients, your customers, what are
mm-hmm.
some key things that you do in order to keep that, retain those clients, and secure your job, but also to do,
mm-hmm.
do your job more efficiently, more effectively?
Well, you know, I come from this place of, you know, what am I about? What do I want to accomplish? You know, what the hell am I doing? You know, sort of thing. But
right, right.
My goal really is, you know, and I truly believe it, we can make organizations better when we make HR better. And it's this interconnected piece of what, you know, what does that mean? Well, I want to challenge HR people to rethink how they do what they do. You know, don't settle for the status quo. Continue to push the boundaries of HR, because we can make it better when we approach it perhaps in a different way, when we really think about and define why we exist, what our value is, how we do that. So that's sort of the focus for HR people. And when we do that, and when we have a new model, if you will, of HR, we will make our organizations better. And so with the small mid-sized companies that I work with who sometimes don't have an HR department, there's someone still handling people things. And so it's getting them to even have a vision of HR. They don't have an HR department, but they're still doing HR things. So what does that mean to them? How are they approaching that? Are they looking at things in silos, or are they integrating everything to do with their people, from how they find them to how they treat them to, you know, how they manage their careers, all of that sort of thing. So I, you know, how do I do that better? I try to connect people to each other. I try to connect people to resources, to ideas. I think that's important. Like this, you know, having conversations like this, just to kind of surface thoughts, surface, you know, new ways of looking at things. And, you know, I think it's also part of me to do things with no expectation for immediate return type of thing. You know, I've had other consultants tell me, oh, no, anytime you have a conversation, you need to charge. well, you know, if somebody reaches out, because I've done this for years as an in-house practitioner, if somebody reaches out and they're a peer, they're a colleague, they're an HR lady from somewhere else and they want to bump something off, I'm going to have that conversation. It may be an hour and a half, and that's okay, because somewhere that's going to come back to me and turn into something.
Right. And any last words of wisdom before we hit the quick hit favorite list?
I think there's two key issues when we talk gender bias and gender equality in the workplace. One, we need to make sure men are part of the conversation. So it's when there's an event,
yes,
we're going to run a panel on gender equality in the workplace, that panel better not just be all women. Men need to be involved in the conversation. And I think the other key piece is this conversation has tended to become, when we look at this in the workplace, has tended to become one that's focused primarily on professional women, women in tech. We tend to kind of gravitate towards that sort of middle class, upper middle class, professional discussion of it. There are many more women in the workplace who probably face more difficult gender discrimination issues, the clerical, the administrative, the folks in hospitality, the women who work in industry, manufacturing. Exactly. And they're often sort of voiceless and powerless in this conversation, or think they are, because, you know, the CPA who wants to ensure that, you know, her employer offers starts to offer a workplace flexibility program has a little more power in that conversation than, you know, the lady who's working as a hotel maid type of thing.
Right.
And so we need to make sure that everyone, every type of position, level of position is included in these conversations as well.
Great advice. I love, we can make organizations better when we make HR better. I love that. Robin, thank you so much for being my guest. Before we
thank
go,
you.
I ask, this is my selfish part of the show, because this is where I learn about new books, new foods, new places to go. So quick hit faves, what's your favorite food?
Pizza. Boring.
Yay! I either answer pizza or sushi, depending on how fat I feel. What's your favorite book? Your favorite book?
My favorite book, and I'm going to go to one that I just recently read, which was Gone Girl.
Good.
If you've ever read that, I didn't see the movie, but read the book.
Oh, okay. It's on. I actually have the book on my shelf, so I need to bust it open. I loved the film. I thought it was just so original, you know, something new, a new story, which we don't often get. So I can't wait to read the book. And your favorite place in the world? Some people answer their home. Some people say some beautiful remote location. So
I would say my favorite place, this is a hard one, my favorite place in the world
is
probably sitting on the couch with my dogs around me. Dogs in
Yay!
The lap.
I do love that too. I love having my dogs on the lap. And lastly, your favorite thing to do?
Not even lately. One of the great things about South Louisiana is there is music everywhere. And love nothing more than just, you know, going out, hitting a local festival or walking down the street. And there, you know, everything from, you know, brass bands to Zydeco to, you know, rock to whatever. Love it. And I
That's
often make the dance floor.
Perfect. Perfect, Robin. Yeah, I love listening to local music, too. I try to do it wherever I go. Was just in Omaha for a social HR camp, and when we went out and found this really cool band in a local little bar that was underground, you know, it's like was something out of like a time warp or something. It was fantastic.
Uh-huh.
So I love doing that. It has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me on my series, Diversity in the Workplace, and addressing this issue that I think we're going to keep talking about, but that's okay as long as we're talking about it.
Exactly.
Thanks again, Robin. Tune in next
week
and I'll be speaking with Chyna Gorman. We'll be talking about what leadership can do about diversity in the workplace. Thanks for joining me today on HR Latte.